Still, great sun so bright, unify our world, our shoes placed together in harmony. We are one. Rebirth of the sun.
This land is yours. You must protect it. It won't be yours as long as you don't protect it. If necessary, with your lives and your children with their lives. Don't discount your enemies. They will be back. And if your house is burned, build it again. If your corn is destroyed, replant. If your children die, bear more. If they drive you out of the valley, live on the sides of the mountain, but live. You always look for leaders, strong men without faults. There aren't any. There are only men like yourselves. They change. They desert. They die. There are no leaders but yourselves. That strong people is the only lasting strength.
And looking at it that way, we're in big doo-doo. Terrible Tommy here, in the bunker right here on the left coast, as they call it. Oh, they're no crazier here than they are anyplace else. Well, maybe a little more crazy. Hey, it's Tuesday here in the bunker, and it's August the 8th, all day, and things are really looking pretty good over the weekend. More fighting, more squabbling between the political parties, more accusations, more threats. The only true racist in the world is threatening to nuke us. Yeah, Kim Kamju, I can't pronounce his name. But he's running a racist state. That is a totally racist state with reverence for the sun as the basis, like Japan used to be and like Aryans used to be. So anyhow, why are we pissed off at this little guy? He's carrying on a grand tradition of hardcore racism. Yeah, think it over. Probably the only difference is he's not fucking around. This is what I am. This is where we're at. I'm going to protect my country. And if I need to come out of here with atomic rockets and shoot them at you, I'll do it. Ying, yang, oh, ying, ying. Because I'm a yellow racist. I guess this is why the system hates his guts. Yeah. Got to be some big reason. Not that he's going to get one of those missiles across the ocean. They know he knows better than that. But he just let them know that he'll fight to the death. I respect that. I don't respect the South Koreans. That's all built on capitalism and greed, money making, all that kind of stuff. Well, I sent you a little message about Ernst Zundel dying, and that's too bad. Ernst was a good man. We had disagreements. He was more trying to disprove the problem. You can't disprove something if it's total lie. I mean, you know, it's just ridiculous. I would have said, oh yeah, you say it happened? Oh, okay, so what? Now let's go on to something else. Rather than trying to disprove something like that, 6 million, it's bullshit. We all knew it was bullshit. But we all knew that a lot of Jews died too. So anyhow, Ernst is gone, and he dedicated his life really to try to remake and refabricate the German nation. And I think he wasted a lot of his life on a German people that are not there anymore, trying to rehabilitate the German people, and they're not worth it anymore, any more than Americans are. I did 3 or 4 television shows with Ernst, and I spent some time at his place in Toronto. He spent some time at my place in Southern California. So we had quite a bit of contact. But after he married this Rimlin gal, our association became strained, because Rimlin is a... she's in the extreme left wing, really. And there's a lot of questions about her. In fact, in one of the books she wrote, she says, "I may be a Jew." Well, I don't know. Anyhow, I'm not going to go through all that stuff. It's water under the bridge now. Here's a note I received about it over the internet. Ernst Zundel has died on this, the 72nd anniversary of the Allied Holocaust in the city of Hiroshima, Japan. Comes the sad news that Gunter Deckardt, that 78-year-old German human rights activist and World War II revisionist, Ernst Zundel, died of heart failure at his ancestral home in Germany yesterday. Unfortunately, the typical right-wing paranoia has already set in, and some people are spreading that, oh, the German government killed him and all that kind of stuff. The Jews got him. They would have got him a long time ago if they really wanted him, because you don't wait till the guy's 79 years old and then bump him off. Usually they don't. I check my vitals and I'm still moving around okay. I haven't seen one Mossad agent around my house for a long time. And I haven't seen any black helicopters over my house for a long time. That must mean they're getting more sneaky all the time. You can't see them, you can't find them, you don't know where they're at. Actually, the power structure is not worried about us. No. Not until certain things start to happen will they be concerned. And then they won't be concerned at first. But as things grow worse for them, they'll be concerned. Yeah, but that's quite a ways off as far as I'm concerned. Well, we're still at P.O. Box 1687, San Jacinto, California, 92583. Tom Metzger. That's where you send your moolah, donations, and so forth, and we'll take good care of them.
And welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Welcome to the Twilight Zone. It would seem this is the place where Debbie Wasserman Schultz resides, works, and even conspires. She's at the center of a growing scandal that includes ethics violations, fraud, embezzlement, theft, lies, misrepresentation, Pakistan, and gross mishandling of sensitive government documents. And guess what? None of this is being blamed on Russia. Crosstalking Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I'm joined by my guest, Philip Giraldi in Washington. He is a former CIA counterterrorism specialist who is now executive director of the Council for the National Interest and writes for the American Conservative. In Los Angeles, we have H.A. Goodman. He is a columnist and journalist published in the Huffington Post, Salon, The Hill, and other publications. And in Orlando, we have Alex Newman. He is an international journalist for various conservative publications. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Philip, let me go to you first in Washington. You came out with an excellent article in the American Conservative, The Strange Case of Amran Awan. This is a huge story. And you thoroughly go through it from what we know now. But you wouldn't know that if you were watching CNN or MSNBC. And, you know, Fox has not really delved too much into it. But it's a fascinating story and potentially explosive. Go ahead, in Washington.
Yeah, absolutely. This story could be huge. Basically, it can involve espionage. It can involve the theft of classified information. It can involve procedures being carried out by Congress in terms of how it hires people and how it manages them. There are so many stories here. It's absolutely incredible. I think the political edge to it is the fact that, insofar as we know now, most of the people, the Congress people who were involved in this, were Democrats. So it definitely has a political edge to it. And I think to a certain extent, that explains why, even though this story has such incredible resonance, it is not being pursued by most of the mainstream media.
H.A., weigh in on that in Los Angeles, and thank you for getting up so early in the morning here. There's an ethics angle, there's a legality angle, there's an espionage angle, and who knows what other angles that could be out there, because there's a lot of dots to connect here that are absolutely fascinating and quite bewildering. But again, I want to stress, you wouldn't know that if you're following mainstream media. Why do you think this is the case? Go ahead, H.A.
Well, I've spoken a great deal about this with a very powerful voice in progressive politics, Tim Black, and we both think that the Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Alwan Brothers scandal can destroy the Democratic National Committee. In context, you have the Alwans getting paid $5 million, but also reports are that they stored congressional data of around 30 House Democrats on outside servers. When you combine the fact that the Alwans stored congressional data from House Democrats on outside servers, and then you look at Hillary Clinton using Platte River, an outside tech firm, to manage her server, which, and then Platte River then used a cloud storage company to manage their emails from Clinton's server. So you have Platte River, you have Dado, you have the Alwans with an outside server, and C using CrowdStrike, which is what sanctions were based on, a third-party tech firm's assessment. The DNC never gave its computer service to the FBI. And then you have Fusion GPS, another firm that Democrats have used in terms of the Trump dossier story. So there's all these outside tech firms. There's this penchant for storing classified information, congressional data outside U.S. government networks.
Okay, H.A., let me ask you real quick. Of course, all of these people have government security clearances, right? They have security clearances, right?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Okay, Alex, you
absolutely,
know,
and that, and that's the problem.
To,
you know,
let me go to, let yeah. me go to Alex in Orlando here. It is a political scandal. That is probably the reason why it's not gaining much airtime. The irony for me is, of course, and reading Philip's article, which I suggest everyone do, go to the American Conservative, there are more facts in one paragraph of Phillips' article than all of the facts assumed, believed, imagined about Russiagate for the last year. Go ahead, Alex.
Well, thanks, Peter. Thanks for having me on. And it's really been an incredible thing to watch the mainstream media finish destroying itself. You mentioned the article in the American Conservative. You know, you will always find more truth in the alternative media, the conservative-leaning media, than you will in the controlled opposition or on the fake news network, CNN, CBS, ABC. That's just become a fact of life, and I think that's why the media has lost all of its credibility. I think the reason why this story is not being reported is because the establishment won't get any kind of advantage out of it, and it might actually end up swallowing some of its operatives, people like Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and of course it doesn't damage Trump, and so that's why we're not hearing anything about it. If they could find some way to make this into a scandal about Trump, we would be hearing about it nonstop on every mainstream so-called media outlet. I like to call them the fringe globalist media now, because mainstream is really not an accurate characterization anymore.
It's an antithesis, yeah. Philip, you come from the world of intelligence. I mean, what possibly, how bad could this be when we have this family, a clan of people, paid exorbitantly, apparently? What kind of damage to national security could there be? Because in the world of the Internet, as it explained to me, if you think you've lost something, you've probably lost everything. Go ahead, Philip.
Yeah, I think your last comment sums it up. If you think you've lost something, you've lost everything. These guys, as AJ mentioned, basically set up their own server. They could have transferred over virtually everything that they had access to, and they had access to almost everything. They had access, for example, to Debbie Wasserman Schultz's iPad, which was connected with the DNC server. So there you go with in terms of who stole the information from the server. It could have been these guys. They could have done it for any number of reasons. They could have sold it to somebody. They could have given it to somebody. They were born in Pakistan. They had close connections with the Pakistani government, is evident. And these ties were never investigated in any way. They had no security clearances. They had it's not even clear if these people were checked out. A number of the people they brought in to work in Congress actually didn't even know how to do the IT stuff. So it was one of the brothers who would go from place to place filling in for the other people that they had secure jobs for. So we had paying them $4 to $5 million. They were bringing in other people. One fellow who owed them money got a job for $250,000. And this guy was not vetted or accounted for in any way.
Maybe our audience doesn't know this because they're not being told by the lamestream. I will use a different term, a more appropriate one. H.A., is it this guy, he was trying to flee the United States. He was fired by Wasserman Schultz after he was arrested. And it has been reported that if he hadn't been arrested, that Wasserman Schultz might have kept him on the payroll while he was in Pakistan. Okay, these are reports. I can't confirm them, but I've come across them. This is remarkable. Go ahead, H.A. in Los Angeles.
Well, yeah, there are reports that they were paid close to $5 million or around $5 million. But the interesting thing is also that Imran Awan is in the WikiLeaks DNC emails where one of the people in the Clinton campaign or the DNC states that he has Debbie Wasserman Schultz's iPad password. So not only did he store or not only did he and his associates store congressional data from House Democrats on an outside server, but he also had access to Debbie Wasserman Schultz's password. Theoretically, he could have accessed the DNC servers. So we have a situation here where U.S. foreign policy is being dictated by a third-party tech firm in CrowdStrike, and then you have an ongoing Capitol Police and FBI probe of Imran Awan, who had access to DNC servers through Debbie Wasserman Schultz. So this is a deep-seated hatred of cybersecurity from the Democratic Party. And the potential for national security issues is overwhelming.
Alex, it seems to me that the Democrats just have a really bad relationship with technology. I mean, here we have this IT aide. He left his house, rented it to someone in the military, and they have all these, smashed hard drives. I mean, the Clinton people smashing iPads and Blackberries. I mean, I guess this wouldn't be considered concealment of evidence and obstruction of justice. I wouldn't go that far, I suppose. Go ahead, Alex.
And who could forget the thousands of emails about the targeting of conservatives and conservative organizations by the IRS that have somehow mysteriously disappeared? It's just a never-ending parade of this kind of nonsense. And, one of the things that really struck me with this Debbie Wasserman Schultz case was seeing her interaction with the Capitol Hill police chief. She was trying to get her laptop back, and, if that wasn't suspicious, I don't know what's suspicious. There needs to be some real investigations here. I think counterintelligence needs to get on this immediately, assuming they're not on it already, because I think there's very real prospect here that we could have some kind of intelligence operation at work, or that there could have been some blackmail, or both. And, we absolutely have to get to the bottom of this. This is crucial. Were her votes, manipulated with somebody blackmailing her and other members of Congress? We know this has happened before on the Senate side. We know that the CIA has been, monitoring emails from lawmakers and using that material. So, we need to find out where this all goes. We need to get to the bottom of it, because if votes were taken that were manipulated, that were obtained through coercion or blackmail, we have a very serious problem here.
Philip, talk about the issue of blackmail here, because it seems so strange that paid so much money. I mean, a family clan, no security clearance. This smells awful. Go ahead, Philip.
Yeah, well, blackmail is certainly a possibility, and that would explain some of the exorbitant salaries, and it would also explain why Debbie Wasserman Schultz kept this gentleman on the payroll until the day after he was arrested. So, and then another thing that smells very bad to me about this is who is the defense lawyer who is defending this guy and ostensibly defending him for bank fraud, which is not a serious, enough offense to merit this kind of reaction. But this guy is named Chris Gowan. He's a close friend of the Clintons.
There you go.
And he's a high-profile, high-expense Washington lawyer who basically is a confidant
of
the Clintons.
Phil, let me jump in here. I have to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Debbie Wasserman Schultz. For All Things Are Considered, I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing the trials and tribulations of Debbie Wasserman Schultz. In Washington, right before we went to the break, you were talking about how a high-profile, high-powered lawyer is defending this former IT specialist from Pakistan. Shouldn't that send off some bells in the media also? I mean, if this is such a small fry and the crime that he is alleged to have committed so minor, why all the muscle? Go ahead.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. I mean, if this were indeed a minor offense, this guy would not be the lawyer. I mean, this, apart from anything else, Imran Awan had declared bankruptcy a couple years before. He couldn't afford this guy, and this guy wouldn't take this kind of case. So why is a Clinton confidant lawyer involved in defending this guy? I mean, that's a serious question that has to be answered.
H.A., let me speculate here. They make him a deal. Okay, they make him a deal. He spills the beans, tells them what he's got, tells them what they know about Debbie, and then the next step is they go talk to Wasserman Schultz. They say, this is what we got from your guy, and now you're going to flip, and you're going to tell us about the DNC, and you're going to tell us about Bernie Sanders, and a whole lot of other things, like the Clinton Foundation. I could go on and on, okay? Is that a possible scenario in your mind? Go ahead.
Well, I think that Debbie Wasserman Schultz would rather go down with the ship.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I believe that Debbie Wasserman Schultz needs to be investigated because of the fact that the Awans stored potentially classified information on outside servers. I have no idea why Hillary Clinton used an outside server company, two companies, Platte River and Dato Inc., which included cloud servers to store her classified top secret and special access program intelligence emails. I have no idea why Debbie Wasserman Schultz would allow the Awans to store the emails of 30 House Democrats on outside servers. All the FBI and Capitol Police have to do is ask Imran Awan and demand knowledge from Debbie Wasserman Schultz regarding where outside the U.S. government this intelligence is stored. If we have tech staffers that are taking information from the U.S. government and storing it outside the U.S. government, that's all the FBI needs to ask. It's not a very difficult question to ask, and it's not a very difficult piece of information to find out. Where these servers are located, that will give us a lot of answers to what Debbie Wasserman Schultz's role in all of this is.
Alex in Orlando, I guess it's one of these oh lordy moments, okay, thinking of Jim Comey. Thank goodness he isn't head of the FBI, because no reasonable prosecutor would pursue Hillary Clinton. Well, very reasonable ones would. Will a reasonable prosecutor take a look at Wasserman Schultz and maybe even Hillary Clinton again? As we speak, more emails are being released about nefarious activity on the part of the Clinton Foundation. My point is here, will the FBI and other authorities press this? There's more than a smoking gun here. Go ahead.
And you must have been reading my mind, Peter, because that's exactly what I was thinking. as we were talking. I mean, I hope that the FBI is being cleaned up, and I hope that the FBI will start looking at this stuff. And I do think, you know, Hillary Clinton and her email scandals and all the rest of it needs to be revisited by a prosecutor. I mean, Comey basically outlined a criminal case against Hillary Clinton and then said, but we're not going to recommend charges. So there was a real problem with that, and I hope that as, you know, things proceed with the Justice Department and the FBI. You know, I saw Trump has been saying on Twitter recently that, you know, Sessions needs to be tougher on Hillary Clinton. I think that's a positive development. I think it's time that we drain the swamp, and that really has to begin with the worst of the worst swamp creatures, and I think Hillary Clinton is at the center of that. And I think this this whole saga with Debbie Wasserman Schultz might open up a whole bunch of different cans of worms that really we do need to be exploring, because there's just so much crime, so much corruption. We got to start somewhere, and this is a very obvious place to start.
Philip, is this a litmus test for the new administration? Because one of the, and I think all of us would agree that we've seen, you know, nominally non-political institutions politicized. I'm thinking of the Justice Department, the FBI. I mean, if this story doesn't move, if the authorities don't move on this, then it's another perfect example that the institutions that should be, you know, how, you know, the woman with the blindfold holding the scale, it's a fiction then, because then there two different forms of justice. You can, you know, there are those that are privileged and they can get away with it, and the rest of us don't get away with it. I think this is a litmus test, a very important one. What do you think?
Well, I agree with you absolutely, but the problem with litmus tests like this is that it all depends on which side of the fence you're looking
for. Sure.
And if they go after Debbie Wasserman Schultz, it's going to be the defenders of Debbie will say that this is politicized. And if they don't go after her, the people who would like to see her prosecuted will say it's been politicized. So it's kind of a slippery slope either way. I think definitely there's certainly enough evidence out there already to go after this in a serious way. And it will be interesting to see how the Justice Department and the FBI, which I have been informed, is treating this as a very sensitive investigation with very few people in the loop in terms of what's going on. We'll see how this plays out.
So do you think that's a good thing? I mean, is that in your mind, with your experience, is that the fact that it's being kept really tight, is that a positive thing in your mind?
Well, it could be one of two things, right? Either that's a cover-up or basically they are keeping it tight so there won't be any political repercussions before they announce how they're going to proceed.
Okay.
So it could go either way. That's the problem with the politicized situation in this country.
Yeah. Okay, well, they're keeping it tight because they don't want leaks, because that's what every day we get leaks and leaks and leaks.
Right.
That's right. Okay, maybe this will be the first test of the new administration at their anti-leak policy. H.A., you know, if you look at what is written about it in the liberal media, this is playing the race card. It's because he's a Muslim. It's because he's a minority. I mean, everything I've read about this guy's character, if he wants to call himself a good Muslim, I think a lot of people would disagree with that. Okay. I mean, it just, again, this is this automatic, you know, oh, if you're against this, you know, you must be a racist, you must be this and this and this, and they never answer anything. As a matter of fact, Wasserman Schultz, has she said anything about this? I can't find any reaction. I mean, her name is being mentioned, all these allegations, and she's quiet. Apparently, she has a good, high-powered, high-profile lawyer, I suppose. Go ahead, H.A.
Well, this has nothing to do with Imran Awan's religion or his country of origin. What this has to do is Debbie Wasserman Schultz has a history of, she was forced to step down because the WikiLeaks DNC emails showed that she cheated Bernie Sanders.
Yep.
She then was complicit in a whole lot of other issues, the Awan scandal being one of them, in terms of paying tech staffers $5 million, where did the money come from? In terms of saying, okay, not only are we going to utilize your services, but you're going to work for around 30 House Democrats, some of whom are on the House Intelligence Committee.
Oh.
The Awans did not have security clearance. They stored emails on outside servers. If you want to just connect the dots, Hillary Clinton did the same thing. She actually used cloud servers. So she used a company called Platte River that's now being investigated by Congress. The CEO is. That Platte River is also linked to Paul Combetta, Reddit's Stone Tier, who deleted Clinton emails with BleachBit. after they were requested by Congress. And that company, Platte River, then outsourced to a cloud storage firm Clinton's emails. So I have no idea, and the FBI should simply ask, why not only did Hillary Clinton outsource her emails that were classified and top secret to a cloud storage company, but why did Debbie Wasserman Schultz knowingly use people who then took government records, potentially classified information, and stored outside the U.S. government like Hillary Clinton did on outside servers? It's just an easy question the FBI needs to ask Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And if she knew this was going on, well, you don't even need intent. Hillary Clinton never needed intent to be. But the fact that it was going on and she was presiding over this and she tried to obstruct justice by threatening the Capitol Police chief, all of this paints a giant web of Debbie Wasserman Schultz hiding why she used the AWANs.
Okay. Alex, obviously the reason why the mainstream, lamestream media doesn't want to pursue this because it would take an enormous amount of air out of that fake story, Russiagate. I mean, if you want an access to government emails and classified material, you have a whole clan, a whole family from Pakistan with all the keys and passwords here. I mean, that would deflate and deflect from this year-long witch hunt that is based on no evidence whatsoever. And the media and the Democrats have invested so much into it, and members of the deep state, they can't give it up. No, and in the process, they can't pursue justice. Go ahead, Alex.
Well, that's right. The conspiracy theory, Trump being a Kremlin agent, I think has kind of imploded. And I say that as somebody who's, you know, fully aware that there's a lot going on with the Kremlin and operations in the United States. But the idea that Trump is, somehow a Putin poodle is just so ludicrous. But you're right. They've invested so much into this narrative that it's kind of like the global warming hoax. If they were to come out and say, well, you know what, actually we were wrong and we're really sorry about that, they would just look like total fools and their entire argument against Trump would collapse. And so they certainly can't do that. Now, going back to the gentleman involved in this IT scandal, he actually has displayed a history of immoral, unethical behavior. Right. I read about court filings that were made by his own family where he was accused of blackmailing a family member. He was claiming he was very powerful and he had
wiretapping.
Yeah, that makes me wonder too, what kind of connections?
Philip, where's this
right, wiretapping as
Philip,
well.
Philip, let me give you the last word, 5 seconds, 10 seconds here. Where's this going to go? What do you think?
Well, I think the government's going to do the right thing because we have a Republican president and I trust Sessions. And I think they are going to follow through on this. And I think they should follow through on this. And I think this will be probably the scandal of the century.
I agree. Gentlemen, we've run out of time fast.
Do you really think it's going to go anywhere? Or maybe a few underlings get their fingers, hands slapped? No, they're just, the only reason I play this stuff is to let you know, so you know for sure in your mind, you're living under a totally criminal government, and you have been for a long time. That's all I play this stuff for, because I don't expect them to ever change. If it's not one thing they're being crooks about, it's something else, and it just goes on and on. The system is due well to collapse. That's the only thing that'll save us. Yeah. Now I'm going to play you a soundtrack from our television show with Ernst Zundel. And there's probably not many friendly interviews around with Ernst Zundel.
And Tom Metzger has made headlines over the years, and I'm very pleased to get to know the man for the first time and to ask him some questions of what makes him tick today and how he evolved into being a headline maker at the tail end of the 20th century. Tom, welcome.
It's good to be here. Very glad to have this first personal meeting.
We have been communicating through faxes, telephones, videos, but never in person.
I'm a great admirer of yours.
Well, thank you. Likewise. Whenever I picked up any nationalist, right-wing, racist, the revisionist publication, every once in a while, there was Tom Metzger trying yet another avenue, and I kept saying, boy, here's somebody trying to find the magic formula, you know?
Yes.
And so, in the end, did you find the magic formula, or did you find there is none?
I put it out this way. I said, I look at it like you're sitting down at the piano, and you're trying to create a concerto, and you're plinking around at the piano, all right? And I plink at that piano until I hit a note, and everybody screams, the opposition. And then I start hitting that note like mad because I know I've hit the right chord. So that's the way my whole ideas work. Mm-hmm. You just keep trying things. And when I hit the one, which is like somebody taking their fingernails down the chalkboard, and everybody goes, then I know that's the one I want. Mm-hmm. And then I do it as long as it works. And then if it ceases to work, I do something else. But I always try to do something that my opposition would not expect.
So who is the modern kind of mature Tom Metzger? What makes you tick? You are beginning to carve a niche out for yourself as a white separatist, is that correct? Or
yes.
White racist?
White racist
and
or separatist.
You have basically left behind conservatism, virgism. You have even the Klan has been gone by the wayside, and you're certainly not jumping onto the identity bandwagon any longer. You know, all this is behind you.
In fact, religion, pretty much so as it's presently known, is behind me too.
Right. So you want to establish, you want to market a market segment, right? You're looking for what we call in German the Marktlücke, kind of a spot in the market,
right.
A niche for your brand of thought and philosophy.
Well, the idea is to create, which I don't believe we ever had in North America, is a purely white racist movement.
What's the difference between your outlook and the Church of, you know, the Aryan Nations or people of this stripe?
Well, the problem with those type, and there's many things we agree on, and we can still be friends with some of these people, but the problem there is you're spending too much time proving some theological thing that you're never going to prove it to everybody anyhow, even if it was true. And so you're spending too much time in educating the young in religion and the Bible and all that instead of actual politics and race. Now, we're living right now.
So you're wanting a no-nonsense, no-frills, lean, mean fighting machine that basically addresses itself to purely racial issues? Where does race mixing come in? What kind of policies do you evolve? I mean, after all, you're not an island. You're living in the modern United States, which is one of the most race-mixed societies. How do you intend to reverse that, or how do you intend to survive as a force, a viable political force?
Well, first of all, if you're going to be a movement that is recognized and begin to gather power to it, which you must have, you must clear the decks of all the dreamers and all the nonsense and all the side issues that don't have anything to do with the core issue. The core issue is, will this white race survive in North America? Will we maintain our dominance in North America, or won't we? So if that's the case, the program has to be whatever is good for the white race is good, and whatever is bad for the white race is bad. We can no longer accept the right wing in toto. We no longer can accept the left wing in toto. We must be eclectic. Pick programs from whatever direction they come from that fit what we want to put together.
Are you in the danger of painting yourself in a corner where you become so austere or so demanding or set such a high standard that, you know, you cannot develop a consensus amongst fellow whites because 95% of them are going to be so scared of what you're all about that they won't join you and you will be a voice in the wilderness? Do you see a danger there?
I think it's just the opposite. I think I'm making it much easier for them, because the thing that is a big problem in recruiting people to your idea is that you say, well, here's what we believe in. And the guy says, oh, okay. And then you say, well, wait a minute, but we also believe in this. Well, wait a minute. We got to tack this on. We got religion, and you got to think this way about this. Then we got fluoridation, whatever it may be, and then there's the populist. Wait a minute. I'm making it very simple. Your private beliefs about religion are your business. We're not going to meddle with that. You can be an atheist, an agnostic, a Christian, as long as it doesn't affect the best interests of white people. I'm offering maximum freedom for white people. I'm not against nude beaches. I'm not against many things that white people like to do. But I want an all-white state. And I make it very easy. We have one issue. The white man must control it. The white man and woman must control North America.
Okay, now here we are down to the crux of it. That's what I wanted to get at. You will leave the American institutions as you have learned it in high school and in college and whatever, in your American history. You will leave the system with Congress and Senate and the Supreme Court, the checks and balances, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution. Can you work within that framework with this kind of thinking?
No. The end of the republic has happened. It's already gone. It failed us. It failed us in many ways with the money situation, with treaty law, with just the outright hypocrisy of what they say, and then the Supreme Court that can decide anything means anything. I clear the decks and say there's only one kind of government that ever existed, and that's oligarchy. That's the only kind of government that ever will exist, is oligarchy. And we need biological, natural leadership that is able to rise to the top and truly lead the people, lead the white people.
So you are saying, since we are run by an oligarchy composed of natives and aliens, that you want to have your own oligarchy replacing it, an all-white oligarchy? Right?
Obviously. And it is natural, it's logical, and it's in reality historical. All systems are ruled by a few. Now, that does not mean that I believe in being a dictator or anything like that. But every system is an oligarchy. You can be an enlightened oligarchy, or you can be a despotic oligarchy. If you're a despotic oligarchy, very soon you'll be destroyed. But the democracy is such a cruel illusion foisted on the people that they have 500 congressmen or whatever, and all these senators, and somehow that this brings the right things about. Well, it doesn't at all. It just confuses the issue.
So are you going to disenfranchise white people and any other people from voting, from choosing the members of your oligarchy? Or what's the mechanism? I mean, nobody can run a vast country like the United States without having some pretty good idea of how organizationally you're going to get a handle on this. How do you intend to do this?
Well, I want to be perfectly honest with you. At this point, I've used the allegory of the farmer in the field. You have to take this in stages. First, the farmer has to, and having been a farmer, you have to go into the field. You have to get into the field. You have to plow the field.
So you are now at the stage of plowing the field?
We've just begun. We can't plow the field until we have a consensus of white racism in a movement that is not taken away into the right wing and off into the populist or the conservative part. All that, it's got to be white racist movement. Then you have to plow deep.
So now
that's going to take years.
You're looking for the plowman, in effect, still.
I'm looking for the plowman. And then after the plowman have plowed the field, and let's face it, let's call it what it is. That's revolution of a type. It's upheaval. Okay, then you bring in the disc and the harrow. And you break up the big clods. And then only after a period of time are you ready to plant the seed. I'm not an egotist that's trying to... Tom Metzger has the whole ball of wax. I'm going to tell you how to fight in the streets or how to win here. And then I'm going to tell you how to set the government up. And I'm going to tell you how to run, whether you're going to have a military and all that. I'm not that kind of a person. My niche is... And I hate to use the word in a way, but I'm going to prepare the way. I don't believe I'm the man, and I don't believe the man is yet here. But I believe the men are coming from the younger generation. But it's our duty to start plowing, like Robert Matthews started plowing. They made some mistakes. It was sort of a rough start. But as things get heavy in this country and social upheaval goes... I am a more of a propagandist. I am the guy out there with the bullhorn yelling to the farmer, plow deeper, you know. We got to root out all this corruption. We got to have a total change. if we're to maintain ourselves as a race. How about a shortcut to power via military coup? That's impossible. Why is it? The military is one of the most race-mixed, ideologically corrupt institutions responsible for more race-mixing than television and all the other things in this country.
Having said that, are they then not also your most deadly enemy?
They are. The military are definitely our deadly enemy.
How can you, individuals that are in a minority to begin with this extreme viewpoint, which for the time being anyhow is again a minority viewpoint, how do you propose to withstand the onslaught of a system that is armed to the teeth? We are not only talking of military forces, we are talking the militia, you know, we're going to talk the state police, we're going to talk, I don't know how many secret outfits there exist in the United States that we might not even know, you know, the COINTELPRO operations and so on. Is that not like a Sisyphus job that you have chosen here for yourself? Will it not relegate you? And this is my question. Have you posed yourself this question? Have you got the breath? Have you got the stamina and the staying power? The commitment, really, to this idea that it will take. You're talking about a lifetime.
That's right. And but rather than looking at something with a cinemascope lens, I look at it with a magnifying glass. While the average person looks at its immensity, the problem, I look at the flaws and the cracks. And the seeds of the destruction of the military police state are already within it, as it is in the government. The very race mixing they promoted is causing the military to be ineffective. If Saddam Hussein would have had any kind of real force over there, it would have been a bloodbath, and you would have seen what would have happened. The interracial problems will occur, and there's no way to stop it. And also, we have encouraged young people who are skinheads and so forth, don't shave your head, go into the military, go into the police, quietly do your job, and be there.
And do you think that there will be enough white men in time to have this dedication, this quiet self-discipline, you know, to keep your powder dry mentality, that are we not falling victim to this delusion, let's say, of the Turner Diary syndrome? Are you being realistic?
I don't know. But if I'm not being realistic, then at least we're going to fight the Alamo for the saving of Europe. If we have to fight the Alamo and go down with the ship here, if we have to sacrifice ourselves and our children to show Europe, Fortress Europe, and European Russia what they have to do to maintain the white race, then that's what we'll have to do. But we'll be like the Roman soldier at Pompeii, who they had to chisel out of the lava because a Roman soldier could never desert his post. We have a job to do. I mean, I can't go to Germany or France or Spain and become a leader over there. I'm here. This is where I was born, and this is the land that I must, this territory is what I must fight for, good, bad, or indifferent.
Are you encouraged by the changes we have seen overseas and by the domestic changes we have seen once again during the race riots that have just swept North America? Are you encouraged that your viewpoint is
optimistic?
Mm-hmm.
Everything is going according to plan as far as I can see. I'm not a conservative that is wanting to patch up the system. The system has cancer. It needs, you know, you got to get right down and dig. And that's why the conservative right-wing movement must be swept out of the way so that the real fight can begin. And the decay from within and the Negro city-states, I call them now, are going to be a constant drain on the federal government. The federal government is going to try to make everybody happy. It can make no one happy. It's going to be attacked by the blacks. It's going to be attacked by Hispanics. It'll be attacked by all kinds of sectors.
So what's the prognosis, let's say, for the next 10 years?
Mad Max. If you're familiar with Mad Max or I forget the other film that was about San Francisco, but anyhow about the future of turmoil. But you see, the system has bred our warriors You know, they've tried to do it one way by not educating our young people, but in fact, they have created a new barbarian.
Mm-hmm.
And out of this new barbarian that's not tied to religion and things like that is going to come the ruthless
modern savage.
Modern savage who will get his act together, and I think through the whole Darwinistic evolutionary mm-hmm. pattern, then consolidate power. And it may be...
The film you're looking for, is that the one called Escape from New York?
No. Blade Runner.
Oh, Blade Runner, yes.
Yeah, Blade Runner Society. And when I see... And there's a lot of prophecy in Hollywood films. Everybody that negates Hollywood films should not do that. They mm-hmm. should examine them very carefully because there's some very prophetic people making films. It's going right over the head of a lot of people. But there's a lot of us out there that see this.
Mm-hmm.
The whole Blade Runner concept, and then the whole Mad Max concept. These young people they've taught them not to read.
Mm-hmm.
And so they look at pictures. So they look at our videos.
Mm-hmm.
And now they are the underdog.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no more ruthless group on the face of the earth than the Aryan when he's up against the wall. He's total sheep. When he's in charge, usually, to the people. But when he really gets his back up against the wall, like has happened many times in history, forget black riots. If you ever see a white riot, like the Civil War draft riots in New York, where thousands died, where it was total insurrection, and when the hospitals are filled now with AIDS patients and men try to take their children, their wives, into hospitals. They can't get a bed. Watch the white man. It's in here. It's back here in that subconscious. He will rise again. I totally believe that.
And you think that out of this de-civilization mm-hmm. that we're going through, we will become the birth of a new civilization of Aryan
Phoenix.
Man?
It will be nothing like anything we've ever known,
mm-hmm.
but we cannot predict what that will be, but biologically we will sustain ourselves as a force on this earth. Or there's always the other possibility, like I say to the press, that the white race has decided to commit suicide, that it's decided, like some species of animals, that this is, we've done it and that's it, and just meekly trot off into the dustbin of history,
die with a whimper.
I mean, there's no guarantees at all by anything that I know of that the white man has to survive. The world will keep on going. It won't go as well. I mean, you can imagine an all mongrel world with all these races. But nature just sits back and says, here it is, boys.
A kind of continental New York.
Yes.
And kind of intercontinental, like an extended Brazil all over the world.
Yeah. But it's nature throws up the basketball and may the best man win. That's the way I look at it. I don't look for divine deliverance. I think that's one of the real problems that we have in our race, is that so many of our white people are off on a trip waiting for gods they have never experienced to save them. And I don't believe that that's going to happen. They must save themselves.
Are you disappointed as an American about America?
Yes, I'm very disappointed up to now with the white race. Of the so many wimps, I'm very disappointed in the males of the white race. I think that sometimes there's more hope in a lot of the females of the white race than in the males of the white race. I think some of our greatest soldiers now are the women. That they're beginning to show better example than the men. I mean, it's unbelievable how cowardly the average white man has become, where he will take almost anything. Even they can take his woman, and he just whimpers. He won't resist. I think it's going to end because there's a whole new crop of young people that have experienced this.
Explain to me the phenomena, what you're seeing with these young people coming on stream.
Well, these are the first generations that haven't seen the white race, at least on the surface, in control. They see degenerates and corrupt people in control. They have no confidence in the government. I mean, most of the adults are losing confidence in the government. The kids have no confidence in the government, at least a sizable percentage of them. They're less attracted to religions. They are attracted more to violence, because violence is a solution. I have to admit that. Nothing great in history has ever happened without violence. Why do they keep saying, well, what you do may cause violence, when everybody realizes nothing great has ever happened in the world without violence? The young people are programmed to violence through television and movies, so it'll be very easy for them to slip into the warrior mode. Now, I recommend to these young people to become educated, become leaders, and then have a lot of these young people that don't choose to become educated follow them. And these will be the generals as time goes on. But it's out of our hands. We blew it. Our generation blew it. And two or three generations before blew it, all the way back to the First World War. We blew it. So we have no position to criticize the youth. Whatever the youth decide to do, and no matter how ruthless it works out to be, I don't want to see the older whites saying, ooh, well, that's too extreme. Because they're saying, wait a minute, you led us off into World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, these people died for nothing, for big corporations. You're destroying the environment. You don't care about anything but money and materialism. And what did you do to stop it? You did nothing. So don't criticize us when we purge this system.
One last point. What, in the mind of Tom Metzger, what role do the Jews play?
Well, Jewry is a criminal cabal. It's a way of thinking. It's a criminal way of thinking that they have borrowed legends and cult information from Egypt and civilizations beyond, and they put it all together in the nonsense of their Old Testament, boasting about things and people who, for the most part, never even existed. They were simply allegories and so forth. And then help furnish up to us this pacifist Christian religion that has emasculated a majority of our people.
And they have done that just by happenstance at random, or are you a believer in an age-old conspiracy by people who call themselves Jews to dominate the world?
I believe that is a definite possibility. I believe if two or three can conspire, many more can conspire, and the easiest way to conspire is in plain sight. I think that, they have. And I think that the world, there is an occult program being worked out here. It's even beyond money and just plain power, even though the money and power are very important to it. I believe at this point in my studies, there's a hidden hand that is moving across the world, that there is a program to it. And I can't give you every answer of why, but I believe that not only the Jews, and not all Jews, obviously, but I mean the intelligentsia of the Jews, along with the degenerate Aryans of our race who are moving in a similar pattern for their own gain, through masonry and other ways. And once in a while, this Jewish group and this other group clash. And there's not a lot of love lost between them, but they sort of have a balance of power. But I believe in some way it's tied into the occult. And I surely don't have all the answers, but I keep looking for them.
Now, you have rejected the Christian doctrine, the Christian concept, entirely?
The last stop on my Christian experience was the identity Christian thing, because it did make militant fighters out of Christians. But unfortunately, I believe I know, built on the Old Testament. It's built on clay shoes. So I'm out of it.
So that means you, in your concept of the universe, there is no such thing then as a satanic force, or...
Well, my position is that I'm just a little guy down here on the earth, and to be so presumptuous as to say, well, I know everything happening in the universe, or there's some deity out there, is ridiculous. I think we give us too high a rating. I think that we could be just a cosmic mistake as far as that matters on this earth. There's no proof of, of anything different than that. But I cannot put my future and the future of future generations of white people into this maybe faith land. Mm-hmm. I believe there is something that appears to be like ESP among people. I believe that there are powers there that we can develop. I think they're natural powers. I don't think they come from any so-called God. I think that I can get along people with people who say, well, we believe in a first cause. I say, fine, you can believe in it, but how can anybody prove it one way or another? So why even worry about it? So when I get up in the morning and I see the beautiful sun come up, that's really all I need to know. As long as that sun comes up, there's life on earth. And if I have a reverence, it would be very simple, the All-Father Son to me.
Mm-hmm. So you are, in effect, a man firmly planted both feet on the ground. You're not stargazing. You're not looking for extraterrestrial solutions. You are looking for a solution within each man of our race, each woman.
That's true. I'm not expecting to go anyplace when I die. I expect to go in the ground. And if there is eternal life, it's in your race and in the genetic memory of your race. Jack London is one of my great heroes who believed very much in genetic memory. And if there is any everlasting life, it's in your children. You don't go on forever, but your genes and the genetic things can go on for thousands, if not millions, of years. And that's why you have to keep the race straight. That's everlasting life. Not a selfish view like the Christians that you're going to go someplace. You have done your duty, and now you go back to the earth.
Thank you for the conversation.
Thank you.
That audio was a little muffled, but I think you got the point. I actually wanted to run a show of me interviewing him, and we've got him, and I'm going to play it when we find it. But anyhow, I think you would find that this was a pretty good show, and it definitely outlines my belief system. So that's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow on Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day. Until then, kick their ass. And don't forget, worse is better. Chaos.